Welcome to Sweet Peas and a Writer Podcast,
a place where beginning writers can be inspired, encouraged, and informed,
or at the very least, entertained. Recording from the beautiful state of Maine, I'm author Teresa Sneed.
And from the gorgeous desert of Arizona, I'm author Betsy Love. We're nearly coast to coast.
Nearly coast to coast, but not close enough.
We're kind of missing each other.
It's true. Okay, well, Sweet Peas and a Writer Podcast is dedicated to promoting authors. Today, we will be spotlighting the amazing Amanda Sowards, author of Espionage.
Sowards is a graduate of Moses Lake High School and Brigham Young University. She swam competitively for 16 years, including while she was in college. She found it more entertaining to think of plot ideas while following the black line up and down the bottom of the pool. Sowards currently lives along the Wasatch Front with her amazing husband and her adorable twin toddlers. She loves hearing from readers and can be found at alsowards.com, Facebook, Twitter, and Goodreads. Here is the back cover blurb. Nobody expects Peter Eddy to survive his first commando mission to retrieve a code stolen by the Nazis. But when he does come back alive, his success is rewarded with an even more daunting assignment. Partnered with French resistance leader Jacques Olivier, Eddy must identify which of three Allied contacts in Calais is a double agent and use the traitor to help implement a strategic Allied diversion that might win the war. Eddy and Olivier secretly cross the English Channel to confront their suspects one at a time. But what appears to be a clean assignment soon turns disastrous, and a shocking betrayal puts Eddy in the grip of the Gestapo. With the courageous aid of Olivier and his sister Genevieve, Eddy evades the captors with a dangerous escape plan. But as the Allied invasion approaches, treachery in the least likely places lead to fresh graves in the bloodied European soil, and only the power of loyalty and love can transform tragic endings into new beginnings.
Wow, that is a great back cover blurb. I picked that up. I mean, that's really interesting. Okay, so I'm going to read an excerpt directly from Espionage by Amanda Sowards, Chapter 1, Switchblade, early April 1944. Private Peter Eddy felt the cold ocean water soak through his pants before he'd even had a chance to grip the oars. He looked up through the rain to see Captain Ducey laughing at him. "You can still say no, Private." Peter slipped the oars into the channel, feeling rainwater trickle down the back of his neck. And let the Nazis get away with it? No, someone has to do this. I just wish the waves weren't quite so high tonight. The gray-haired captain gave Peter half a grin. Bad weather can be an ally. Use it. You have 3 hours. You should be done in half that time. You say you've never done this sort of thing before? Peter smiled. Haven't even shoplifted. He thought about telling the old sea captain that for 3 years straight he had led his high school baseball team in stolen bases, but that wasn't the type of theft Ducey was interested in. Besides, Peter found that most of the English didn't get baseball. I thought not. Best of luck, then. You Americans are a crazy lot. Peter nodded his farewell and began rowing. It wasn't long, maybe 4 strokes, before Ducey and his ship disappeared from sight. I'm not crazy, Peter told himself, not for the first time that night. Inexperience doesn't mean I can't burglarize a Nazi garrison. Peter had met Captain Ducey just that night. The tough old sailor hadn't been willing to talk about any of the previous missions Peter suspected the man had been on, but he had taught Peter the basics of navigating his small, stealthy ship. Ducey seemed to know the English Channel as well as Peter knew his family's farm back in Idaho, even if his half-dozen voyages during the Dunkirk evacuation were the only trips he was allowed to tell Peter about. Peter's mission, Operation Switchblade, was his first for the U.S. Office of Strategic Services, but it was extremely important. As he rode, Peter reviewed the information he had learned during his briefing. 3 days ago, a German spy stole one of the code books the American military used to communicate with sources in American-occupied territory. It was always bad news to have a code book stolen, but the military normally reissued code books so frequently that it wasn't a significant loss. This particular code book, however, was used to communicate with deep cover agents in Belgium, Denmark, and northern Germany. Peter was told that some of the agents were so entrenched in German military hierarchy that issuing a new code book to them was deemed a risk of unacceptable proportions. The code book's loss was devastating to the Allied cause. If the book stayed in Nazi hands, they could set traps to capture and kill valuable sources of information. One little book. That was why Peter was alone in the dark, in the rain, on the English Channel, hoping not to run into sea mines or to be shot by a Nazi patrol when he landed on the beach. It was his job to find the book and destroy it before it left the French fortress. When Peter's dinghy hit the beach, he wasn't sure he was ready. The OSS man, Captain Knight, had assured Peter he was the right man for the job, but Peter still wasn't convinced. He'd grown up just a farm boy. Since then, he'd been one of thousands of new recruits, then a tank driver, then a very junior member of General Eisenhower's staff. Too late to turn back, he told himself. Now you're a spy. The beach was rocky, but the man-made barriers dwarfed the natural ones. The German army was expecting a cross-channel invasion sometime this year, and they had turned the beaches of northern France into a soldier's nightmare. Peter prayed that he wouldn't step on a mine as he pulled his boat from the surf, past rolls of razor-sharp barbed wire, and around wooden poles stuck into the sand to slow down any invasion force. Peter could make out the glowing end of a cigarette not too far down the beach and wondered how many patrolmen he could expect. He smiled as he remembered Ducey's advice. Bad weather can be an ally. The night was dark, windy, and wet. The few German patrols he saw seemed more focused on staying dry than on looking for phantom enemies. Who, after all, would try to invade on a night like this? It was the type of weather that made sensible people want to stay indoors. Peter usually thought of himself as sensible, but as he climbed the steep hill off the beach, he was grateful for the tempest. The clouds obscured nearly all light from the moon and the stars, and the rain dimmed the sound of his footsteps as he circled the Nazi base. The threat of an air raid kept the fortress dark. The time of night kept it quiet. He avoided the campground's carefully guarded main gates and went instead to a smaller gate, almost hidden. His briefing for the mission had included a map of the complex made by a French refugee who had long ago served on this base. Peter waited while a patrolman walked past and checked the gate, then noiselessly slid toward it, and man moved on. The side gate was secured with an odd lock. Peter waited while a patrolman walked past and checked the gate, then noiselessly slid toward it when the man moved on. The side gate was secured with an odd lock, which took approximately 30 seconds to pick. Peter locked it again behind him, sure a patrol would check it again before he was finished and ready to leave. Once inside, it was easy to avoid the solitary huddled soldiers on patrol. Their flashlights gave Peter plenty of warning that they were approaching. Besides, the building he sought was not far from the gate he had forced, and he soon found an unlocked window that allowed him inside. Peter entered the compound swiftly and found the rooms he sought at the end of a long hallway while backtracking only once. At that time of night, few people were about. The staff room was deserted when Peter arrived. The walls were covered with maps, silhouettes of friendly and enemy planes for identification, a picture of Hitler, and a medium-sized Nazi flag. Beyond the staff room was the commander's office, which Peter managed to unlock even without a key. In the office, the wall decor again included a picture of the Fuhrer, but there were fewer maps. Rummaging through the pile of undone paperwork on the commander's desk, Peter located a book and verified that it was the one he'd been sent to retrieve. It wasn't very big, several dozen pages thick, with a soft, well-worn red leather cover. It had no title, but the first line of text matched what he had memorized earlier that day. Had it really been that easy? Peter wondered. His biggest hardship in retrieving the book had been the weather. He'd been expecting something more difficult. He looked at the clock and realized he still had plenty of time until Ducey would consider the rendezvous broken, so he took apart the commander's phone and snipped a few wires before putting it back together.
You know, when I read through this the first time before we did the podcast, I thought this is definitely a book I want to pick up and read. His escape, way too easy. There was too much going on, huh?
Yeah, I think something's going to happen, and that's the foreshadowing that Amanda has set up for us and for the readers. You know that is something's going to happen, and now you want to find out what.
And you know what? I don't know what it is, but I have always been fascinated with World War II. I love reading accounts of the things that happened, and I just have always been fascinated with that era and what would drive a man to be so driven by power.
I think just, so. Now, did your father serve in World War II?
He served in the Korean War.
In the Korean War. Well, that probably has something to do with it. My father served in World War II.
My uncles did.
My father, Donald Small, he was in the Navy. He was actually really young when he lied about his age and signed up to be a part of something that the people of America totally and completely believed in, the protecting the freedom of our nation. And he was only 15 years old. He lied about his age. And when you look at his very first picture when he was in the Navy, you can tell he was 15. He's got that very young, youthful look to him, you know. But anyhow, so very fascinating. So your father was in the Korean War.
Was in the Korean War. I had uncles who served in World War II, and this is going to give my age away, but my grandfather served in World One.
Your grandfather served in World War One?
Can you believe that?
You are old.
I'm not that old. Mine was the youngest of the children. There were 12. And then I'm one of the youngest grandchildren.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, my Uncle Philip and my Uncle Charlie served too, and they were, I think both of them were in the Army. I know Uncle Philip was in the Army. I think Uncle Charlie was too, and they served in World War II. And my dad and my two uncles served in the Korean War too. We've got a rich heritage, both you and I do, Betsy.
Yes, totally. I totally agree. All right, let's go on with our writing tip, which is from Amanda Sowards. Her writing tip for this week is good writing takes patience and persistence. Don't give up. Don't feel bad if you need to put your project on hold for a while. Sometimes taking a break to learn more about the craft or just giving yourself some space can help you make the manuscript better when you go back to it again. She says, I'm a huge fan of beta readers, critique groups, and writer conferences. It's also helpful to learn more about what publishers need. If you meet their guidelines, it will be easier for them to offer you a contract. You know, that is so true. I put Soulfire on the back burner for probably a good 7 or 10 years before I looked at it again, and because I thought, this is crappy writing. Nobody will ever want this. But when I looked at it again, I went, you know, the story's great, and I honed up on the writing, and it's a darn good story now.
The writing challenge for this week. There are many wonderful websites, blogs, and critique groups on writing. Explore them. But just like Amanda says, it does take patience and persistence, and I might add a lot of practice. So the challenge this week is to pick one area in writing that you need to develop and study up on it. See how you can apply what you've learned to your current work in progress, but maybe you don't have a work in progress yet. And if that's the case, then start at the beginning by searching for ways to, one, find a topic or idea. There are complete books written on that alone. Two, go looking for ways to develop that idea and then brainstorm it until you come up with a killer plot. I don't start a book without brainstorming. I come up with an idea. Something strikes my fancy. And then I take that idea and I will brainstorm by writing it out. I will just go on and on and on and on and on about what could possibly happen. Who are they? I ask the question, what if this were to happen? And I try to develop a really good idea. And it always starts out as just a couple of paragraphs. And if you were to read the paragraphs, you would probably go, where are you going to get a story from that? It doesn't even have anything in it. But I take that little nucleus and I begin to expand from it. Before I go too far into the story, I figure out an ending. How could I take that idea to an exciting ending? And then the next step is I think about maybe the climax of the story. What are at least one or two of the major things that would be obstacles for my main character that would prevent them from getting to this wonderful ending that I have in mind? And then the rest of the thing that when I'm brainstorming is basically just taking it and just thinking. I'm just thinking and just writing this and this and that and kind of putting it together. And I usually end up with only about 4 pages. That's about it. Just 4 pages of note where I think the storyline will go. But the incredible thing that happens, and I think Betsy can back me up with this, doesn't matter what you've written in those 4 pages of notes, your characters are going to take you to places that you won't even believe. When you start writing and giving them a story, they'll tell you whether or not that's the right story or not. And when you have a writer's block, I've discovered it means that I'm not really going the way I need to go with the story. And so I'll back up to where I felt like I was beginning to get a writer's block and I'll start over. I've done that many times. How about you, Betsy? Do you have any advice on brainstorming?
Well, first of all, of course, an idea will come to me and I'll explore it. You know, I'll think about it for a long time. When I came up with the idea for identity, I think I probably didn't write a word about the story for probably 3 or 4 months. I just let that little seed of an idea just grow in my brain, and I kept thinking, well, what if this and what if that? And when I finally got down to where I would sit down to write it, I knew how my book needed to end because I had thought about it so much. And so as I developed how I wanted the book to end, of course, it's a mystery suspense and you kind of need to work backward a little bit. Then I started putting the pieces into place backward. Now, that was just in the brainstorming plotting, but of course I wrote the book from the beginning, but I already knew where I wanted to go with my book. And even then, things changed. People that I thought were the murderers or were in on it suddenly changed, and the main character, Brent, originally going to get killed off in the first chapter. But I liked him too much. I fell in love with his character, and I just, my heart just went, I can't kill this guy. I just cannot do it. So he became a very integral part of the plot. It didn't change the outcome of what happens at the end of the book, but then he became a key player throughout the book. And the other thing I like to do is I think about my characters, and I think, what would be the worst thing that could happen to this person? Besides death, because then that would be the end of your book. But mm-hmm. I always think about, what is the worst thing that this character would have to endure? And then I do it. And I remember somebody reading one of my very, very rough manuscripts of Soulfire, and she was so angry with me. She said, why did you keep having all these horrible things happen to Zephania? And I said, do you care about her? And she said, yes, I stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning just to find out what happened. I said, then I did my job as a writer.
That is excellent advice. And I actually remember when that was happening. I can't remember who it was either, but I remember you telling me about that. That's just a great thing. When you can get your reader to stay up until 2 o'clock in the morning because they're dying to find out about a character, that means that they really have connected with that character and care about them.
Absolutely.
And on the flip side of that, that's a surefire kill if you do something to that character and you don't resolve it. Yeah, that will kill your manuscript. You'll make people mad at you and they won't ever read you again if you don't really think carefully about what you actually do with your characters. I mean, don't you really hate it when you read something and or you invest so much time in something and then all of a sudden they have an ending that is just like makes absolutely no sense? It's just, I hate those books.
I do too.
Okay, so wherever you are in your writing process, dive into it and make it better.
All right. If you've enjoyed this week's episode or would like to suggest a topic for a future one, we would really like to hear from you.
Yes, you can visit us at sweetpeasinawriterpodcast.blogspot.com
or betsylove.com
or teresasneed.com.
I'm Betsy.
And I'm Teresa.
Thanks for joining us.